Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons, from acclaimed artisans to adept arcanists. And today, we're covering Acerak. Prepare yourselves. Acerak's kind of like a Skeletor to me, in a way.
Okay. Skeletor's pretty funny.
Well, I mean, Acerak's not really funny.
Well, I like the Skeletor gifs, like you get, you know, Skeletor parodies and stuff. Those are always a lot of fun to see.
So this is the final episode of our Spooktober Spooktacular.
It's fucking Halloween. Be safe out there.
Indeed.
Don't eat razor blades.
That's not a thing.
Pretty
that's
uncommon.
I think we've talked about this on the show.
Yeah.
That never has happened in the history of humanity's life on this planet.
It's so strange how it gets reported so much.
Yes. Anyways. So we're talking about what could be called the biggest, baddest lich in D&D. Maybe second to Vecna, maybe better than Vecna. I think it's up for debate, but here we go. Acerak's name inspires fear and awe in the hearts of those who know even just the rumors of this archlich's evil deeds.
That is 100% correct. I feel the fear.
He is probably the most notable and powerful lich / demi-lich ever introduced into the game of D&D, with the exception, of course, of maybe Vecna, known in fear throughout the multiverse. Although Vecna is probably more well-known as a deity than as a lich at this point, and Acerak's story is integrally tied in with Vecna, who is at one point his mentor and perhaps even his only friend.
Oh, shit.
Acerak is a Gary Gygax original, originating from Gygax's campaign setting of Greyhawk, and like many characters, villains, and deities that date back to 1st edition, Acerak has a long and storied past, wallowed in mystery, but explained and expanded upon in many eventual modules and novels. His journey crosses planes, worlds, and entire campaign settings. He has been a lieutenant necromancer to the most terrible archlich emperor O'Earth has ever seen. He's been a lich in his own right, with the power to rival his former master. He's willingly undergone the transformation from lich to demi-lich, and then projected his soul into the outer planes to become an entity, not quite a god, but something quite close. He has committed mass genocide, built some of the most formidable dungeons ever created, crafted legendary artifacts the likes of which had never been matched, killed gods, enslaved armies of demons, and crafted many of his own, very own demiplanes to do with as he will. He is known as Acerak the Devourer, Acerak the Eternal, the Lord of Unlife, and Acerak of the Scarlet Robes, and he's about as scary as it gets as we end our October Spookfest with the creator of the Tomb of Horrors itself.
Hell yeah, the Tomb of Horrors. Okay, this is a really exciting episode. Yeah. The Tomb of Horrors is like notorious for like killing the shit out of tons and tons of players. For good reasons. If you go read some of those traps, they are potent.
Indeed they are.
They are powered by this dude.
And he is also featured on the cover of the 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide.
Oh yeah, that's
right. That's him.
That's our boy.
That's the guy.
We could have been shouting out him.
Yeah. But we don't, because we're not dumb.
But we don't. Just shout because out we're Gorgon. Not dumb.
This is a Demogorgon podcast. Excuse yourself, Brian. Okay, so as I stated before, Acerak has had many forms and thus many physical descriptions throughout his existence. When he was once living as a mortal, he was a Cambion, a mostly human-looking wizard in black and red robes. His eyes glowed a malevolent yellow. His nails were long and claw-like. He was bald and ashen-skinned. As a lich, he appears as a skeletal figure wearing a tall, pointed crown-like helmet with long horns.
Ooh,
he wears flowing robes and carries a twisted staff topped with a glowing skull. On a chain around his neck, he wears an amulet depicting the sign of the Devourer, the face of a green demon with a gaping maw, known for its appearance on the wall in the Tomb of Horrors. As a demi-lich, Acerak let his physical body deteriorate away, leaving only a cracked and disembodied skull. He sent enchanted gemstones into the skull's eye sockets and teeth. Each of these soul gems possesses the power to capture souls which then feed his phylactery.
Nice.
Currently, Acerak has no designated body and is a spirit that wanders the planes and worlds of the cosmos uninhibited by a physical body, but he can possess the body of any undead that he wishes at any point of time if he comes in contact with it.
Okay, cool.
And in the latest module, The Tomb of Annihilation, he is back at it again in lich form.
Damn, Daniel.
And he either does not require a phylactery anymore, some modules say that it's been destroyed before and his spirit reformed by sheer force of will.
Oh, man! Because that's the whole thing with the lich, right?
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
You have to have the force of will to become the lich and maintain yourself.
Exactly. That is exactly what a lich is about. And the other theory is that his phylactery is so well hidden that no being alive or dead knows its whereabouts.
Yeah, fuck so. Your Nat 20.
Kind of up to it's kind of up to the DM's discretion.
So you said he started out as a cambion or
early yeah
on
he was born. We're gonna get into it. We're gonna tell his story, but like originally he was a mortal. He was a cambion, which is basically he was a half demon.
Right.
Half
they're like winged, right? Or like
no, not necessarily. So they're much like tieflings, especially in the older editions.
Right. Red skin.
It was
or
more
something.
Randomized.
Okay, got it.
Especially when it came to the demon part of it all. And okay, he is part demon, not part devil.
Got it.
So, Acerak's story is long and it's complicated, but I'm going to do my very best to summarize it in a cohesive telling because you got to remember, this starts in first edition and it goes across every edition, different modules, different settings. Like, this dude's been everywhere, been written by so many writers that it isn't quite like this cohesive, like straight line that you
I
that
think
a story
it goes without saying that if you walked the halls of Castle Greyhawk, that your story is long and tattered at this point.
Exactly. Like yeah.
You're fucking the scroll we open up is like got like fucking sticky notes all over it and shit. Like reference this page for this data. Like oh my gosh.
And I had like 20 different sources I had to go through to make sure I got all the pertinent information for this guy. But afterwards, we'll get into who he is and what makes him tick. So. Acerak the Devourer was born a cambion at the very least over 1,000 years ago. We know it was at least 1,000, maybe probably more years ago that this happened.
So when you say like 1,000 years ago, we're not talking about the year of our Lord 2020.
We're talking about
in-game vanilla
in-game
or Forgotten Realms
wherever
time?
Greyhawk is now.
Greyhawk, okay.
Yeah, and like I'm not sure where Greyhawk is now in relation to Forgotten Realms.
Right.
But okay. I guess I could have just simplified it by saying a long time ago.
Yeah, so I mean, quantifying it could be an issue in your game.
Yeah, he was a product of the Balor named Tarnhem, who took his human mother by force. Do you remember what a Balor is?
Yeah, are those the big, stocky ones?
They're the biggest, most powerful demon before becoming a demon lord.
Right, okay,
They're Balrogs.
Yeah.
A sword of lightning and a whip of fire.
It's a whip, okay. Yeah. I was like, is it a chain? But there's a different one that has chains, right? Chain master?
That's a chain devil, and that's a devil.
Okay, Balor's I was kind of mixing those up. So
his father is a Balor named Tarnhem, who took his human mother by force. Apparently, an ancient conjurer summoned a demon that was far beyond his ability to control. The demon devoured the wizard, forcibly conceived a cambion son in one of the wizard's servant girls. Acerak's mother was unable to conceal her son's fiendish lineage until about age 10 when a lynchwan burned down their house. Oh. Only Acerak survived due to the supernatural ability from his fiendish blood.
Damn.
Acerak would later cite this event as what inspired him to undertake the study of necromancy and set upon a path of revenge against the entire human race.
Oh, dang. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, like, they burned down your house and killed your mom. Sure.
Yeah, sure. Before long, the boy was rescued by none other than Vecna, the Whispered One. Mm. Now, this is fitting because Vecna had a very similar childhood that set him on the path of lichdom / world domination. The whole mob killing his mom over a suspicious dark magic lineage and all that.
He's like, you remind me of something that's a secret.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Tell anyone I told you that.
So Vecna felt strongly enough about taking Acerak under his wing that he killed the advisors under him that urged him to kill the child instead. Mm. And then he took the half-demon on as his apprentice.
Cool.
So even then, 10-year-old Acerak loathed life, looking forward to becoming undead like his master. So during Vecna's siege of Fleeth, the Lich was severely wounded, and he ended up being rescued by his apprentice, Acerak. Vecna subsequently promoted the cambion to one of his chief lieutenants alongside Vecna's eventually traitorous betrayer, Cass the Bloody Handed. It is unknown if Acerak was present when Vecna was betrayed by Cass the Bloody Handed. However, at some point after that, he moved on from his former master and went out on his own. Mm. So okay. Acerak entered the service of the demon prince Orcus. taking advantage of his authority in the Demon Lord's cult to order the construction of vast crypts, including at the site which would eventually become the Tomb of Horrors. After pursuing numerous avenues of research to extend his lifespan, an aging Aesirach finally settled on Lichdom and buried himself in the Labyrinth Tomb, where he committed himself to his studies. Once he achieved his goal, Aesirach abandoned his fealty to Orcus and claimed the crypts as his own. Over the centuries, Aesirach's power began to wane, as all liches eventually do. Rather than simply feed souls to his phylactery or seek out new sources of power, he delved into a period of research and ordered his servants to spend the next 80 years building the legendary and deadly Tomb of Horrors beneath the construct where he held court.
Shit.
Afterwards, he buried the architect and all of the workers within the tomb.
Why?
So that no one would know how it was built or its layout.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I wonder if when he's, like, aging and he's, like, time to become Lich Man, mm-hmm. if he's, like, he's got all his options, like, laid on his desk. He's mm-hmm. got, like, a bunch of tomes open to specific pages with, yeah. like, you know, bookmarkers here and there.
Yeah,
he's got,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
potions brewing. And he's, like, he goes to get up to, like, stir the cauldron and his fucking back gives out. He's, like, oh, God. Fuck it. Okay, I'm Lich today. Lich today.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's exactly how it happened. That's hilarious. So, retreating into his new tomb, Aesirach willingly failed to maintain the soul energy necessary to retain his physical state and degraded to a pile of Lich dust and a single gem-encrusted skull.
That's, like, the hardest drug you can do in D&D is Lich dust.
Yo, you gotta get that Lich dust?
Yo, dog. I know you got what I need.
Lich dust, not even once. So, Ace, that should be a t-shirt. Aesirach abandoned his physical body, accepting that it would molder and dissolve to dust while he traveled the plains as a disembodied consciousness. If the skull that was his last physical remains ever was disturbed, its gems would claim the souls of the insolent intruders to his tomb, magically transferring them to his phylactery. Aesirach intentionally allowed rumors of the location of his original tomb to spread, along with tales of immeasurable treasure buried within, resulting in a wave of brave adventurers attempting to brave the deadly Tomb of Horrors. To maintain the tomb, he employed armies of ethereal demons to replace slain monsters and reset disabled traps and restore missing treasure to varying degrees of accuracy. Mm-hmm. So he's basically got a perpetual motion machine of a dungeon that is designed to attract adventurers that then die and souls go to his phylactery.
Yeah, so okay, yeah. Basically, so if you die in the Tomb of Horrors, you die in real life, and he takes your soul.
Yes. And, like, the idea here is, like, he set up this, like, it's an automatically phylactery filler so that he can go off and do other things in other planes of existence and not worry about it.
Yeah, so it's just like a fucking adventurer's flytrap.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So some people, do people make it out alive? Like, I'm sure you play the game and, like,
yeah.
some people do get stuff.
Right. But generally speaking, no. I'm not sure on the chronology of the fucking adventurers that have gone into the Tomb of Horrors and made it out. I don't know.
Like, we're not watching your home game. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, I'm thinking if you do make it out of there that, like, did we go back to saying Aesirach? Aesirach should not. Aesirach or Aesirach, don't talk to me about it. Will come find you to keep his lair secret?
No, I don't think so, because he's got his army of demons that replace treasure, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So like,
some have to get out.
It's almost
something
like
sometimes.
You want someone to get out and tell others
exactly.
about it so they go in.
Exactly.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah. So he didn't stop with the Tomb of Horrors. In his new ethereal form, he carried on an epic campaign of exploring multiple worlds, establishing deadly dungeons and acquiring artifacts. Aesirach travels the plains in search of artifacts. When he finds something useful or interesting, he locks it away. Mm. Although he's powerful enough to pursue godhood, as other liches have done, Vecna being the prime example, Aesirach has no interest in being a god or being worshipped. Instead, he prefers to create evil gods and unleash them on mortals and immortals who oppose him. Despite passing up opportunities for godhood, Aesirach attracts his fair share of followers and worshippers anyways. Now, he doesn't grant spells or anything, nor does he give his devotees much of his precious time. Mostly, he just likes to watch them suffer and die as a result of their own magical pursuits and folly.
For sure. Okay.
Although he has lived on many worlds and crafted countless demiplanes, Aesirach spends most of his time building other tombs, much like the Tomb of Horrors. He fills each with one with treasure to attract powerful adventurers. He then kills them off in terrible fashion, using deadly traps and monsters while baiting and ridiculing them. The terror he invokes scars their souls, which he then traps in his phylactery, the location of which, again, is one of the multiverse's greatest secrets.
I got to tenderize that soul a little bit before I trap it in my phylactery.
He doesn't really want to be a god. He just wants to, like, he wants to explore how fucked up dark science can get.
Okay.
That's basically his deal.
It's like some Baphomet style stuff.
He wants to push the boundaries of, like, what's possible in reality.
All right.
He doesn't care about worshippers.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. For example, at some point, Acerex journeys lead him to the forbidden city of Omu in Shult on the world of Toril, Forgotten Realms, whose priests were routinely killed in a series of death traps to appease their nine trickster gods.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Impressed by the death traps.
Hey, nice.
Nice death traps,
bro. Is
that a
Rube Goldberg machine death trap?
Yeah.
This is great.
He's impressed by the death traps. Acerex says, cool, those are mine now. He kills all nine gods, enslaves the people, and forces them to build a dungeon beneath the cliffs called the Tomb of the Nine Gods, where he then he seals away the souls of the nine gods in the tomb. Acerac then slaughters all of his slaves by using them to test the deadliness of the dungeon, and then he turns the ones that survived into undead and flesh golems that he then populates his dungeon with.
The one guy is like, I built something unsurvivable. He's like, prove it. Get in there, dog.
Exactly. Get in there, dog. But yeah, we'll get more into his exploits after a short rest.
I would love a short rest.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga,
a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
Here we are.
And
we're back in the podcast.
Indeed we are. And it's time to talk about the other horrifying exploits attempted and master plans done by Acerac.
Happy motherfucking Halloween.
Indeed, everybody. Happy Halloween. I believe this episode is coming out on the 28th, so we're 2 days or 3 days from Halloween.
That is so cool.
Very excited.
I am going to do, we've been driving around, a lot of our neighbors have taken to putting out like extra lawn ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fun with I have a little girl, so she's super about Halloween.
Yeah,
we're not even, she's taking a Jack Skellington doll and we're running up and down the fucking street in front of my neighbor's house yelling about spooky werewolves and monsters.
That's cool.
I am so stoked. This Indeed. Is a great this has been great so far in terms of horror.
Mm-hmm.
This is a horrible guy.
I just watched The Haunting of Bly Manor. It was okay. That's what,
okay.
I've been in a horror cool. mood because he's a horror. I was like, I've been watching some horror stuff lately. That's the last one I watched.
I'll put on Insidious, and if you haven't seen Insidious and you're a fan of Ranger Danger, then like Ranger 2 would be a cool reference for you to get. That's good true. Halloween movie.
All right, let's get back to Acer Rack.
Yeah.
So other horrifying exploits and attempted master plans by Acer Rack include, one, attracting a cult-like following that established a settlement known as the Skull City, populated by mad worshippers and necromancers, including a school of necromancy known as the Black Academy. Among the Academy's upper echelons included those researching the true nature of Acer Rack. At its height, Skull City was home to nearly 500 and around 1,000 undead servants of various other creatures.
Wow.
Number two, attempting to steal away the great souls of any individuals powerful enough to defeat his dungeons and use these to empower a ritual, allowing him to merge his consciousness with the entire negative energy plane.
What? What does that mean?
Giving him the ability to take control of every single undead in the multiverse.
What? Hold on a second. Somebody's got some shit to say about that. If he starts popping off that move, somebody's going to be really mad, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are going to be real mad. That's why,
like Orcus, right? He's going to be super pissed.
Yes, Orcus would be very pissed. Raven Queen would be pissed.
Because you said he followed Orcus, but then he got out from under that to go do other things. Yes. So Orcus probably Vecna still
would
mad
even
at him.
Be mad at him at that point.
Yeah, okay. Raven Queen is hot.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Luckily, it didn't work out. Adventure stopped him.
didn't work out, though.
These are just things that he's tried. Here's one. He attempted to... He crafted a series of great eldritch engines, elaborate and ruined machines designed to focus magical energy. His goal was to absorb the power of all dead and forgotten gods, allowing him a level of power that surpasses even that of deities. He placed these engines throughout the plains. Of course, he got stopped by adventurers, but he got close.
Fucking adventurers, man.
Finally, and most recently, okay, big spoilers for Tomb of Annihilation. Okay. If you don't want to know spoilers for Tomb of Annihilation, come back in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or maybe less than 5 minutes, but just be aware that they're coming for the next more than 5 minutes. I got a fat paragraph to read.
Go 7 minutes out and then scrub backwards.
There we go.
Until you get to us, like, clapping or something.
Yeah. So, Acer Rack found... being called an Atropal, adrift at the edge of the negative plane, and built an artifact called a Soulmonger to nourish it to godhood. The Lich chose one of his tombs, specifically the Tomb of Nine Gods on Toril, to serve as the Atropal's nursery. Now, first let me explain to you what an Atropal is so you can understand how horrifying of an idea this is.
Yeah, a couple things.
And then explain to you what the Soulmonger is so you can realize how horrible that is as well.
I was going to say, that's a cool name, but I don't know what a Soulmonger is.
Yeah, so an Atropal or an Atropal is a ghastly, unfinished creation of an evil god cast adrift and abandoned long ago.
Whoa.
Atropals are unfinished godlings that had enough of a divine spark to rise as undead. Since a natural was never truly alive, it can't be raised from the dead or resurrected by any known means. Even divine intervention can't breathe true life into this hateful, miserable horror.
It's a big, fat cloud.
It's a big, fat, ugly cloud. No, it doesn't look like a cloud. I'll tell you what it looks like in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Okay, truly one of the most perverse undead creatures. A piece of godly flesh could eventually become a god itself, unless it's destroyed if it receives enough energy.
Okay.
An Atropal is malformed and unfinished, resembling an overgrown dead fetus, sometimes with an umbilical cord still attached. Its wet, wrinkled, and bloated body is surmounted by a hairless, overlarge head set with glassy, vacant eyes.
Oh, man.
It constantly drools stinking ichor as it mouths obscenities. Its arms are too slender, with tiny hands ending in cruelly shaped nails. An Atropal never walks, but always floats, with its atrophied dead legs hanging uselessly below it. Despite their appearance, Atropals are actually extremely intelligent and extremely powerful, though. An aura of necrotic cold surrounds an Atropal, so numbing that it draws life from the living. An Atropal's very gaze can cause death, and they are also dangerous spellcasters. Few Atropals roam freely across the plains, while others are sealed away in separate realms and demiplanes or buried beneath the ruins of dead civilizations.
Yeah, I'm definitely hiding that guy. That sounds horrible. horrible. So
Acerak found one of those.
It's like, yes.
And then he decided, like, yo, let's turn this into a god and unleash it on Toril and see what happens.
And the whole time it's drooling and calling him like a death-obsessed fuck.
Exactly. So Acerak finds one of these, decides, you know what, let's just take this thing to full god and unleash upon the world, just to see what happens. But how does one finish the unfinished process of ancient deities and give this undead god fetus what it needs to grow big and strong? Souls. And he's an expert in souls. Countless souls.
A currency of the Dungeons and Dragons verse.
Indeed. Too many souls, though, for Acerak's dungeons to supply. So he builds a device called the Soulmonger.
Okay.
The Soulmonger is an immensely powerful artifact constructed by Acerak and a coven of hags that he enlisted to aid him. The artifact is not only able to drain the life of individuals who have been resurrected at some point in the past, but also collects the souls of the dead creatures from all over Faerun simultaneously. The intent of crafting the artifact was to harness souls from all over Toril and feed them to the Aetherball Acerak had brought from the negative energy plane, planning for the Aetherball to become a god of death that could ravage the prime material plane. For the Aetherball and the Soulmonger's protection, they were both placed on the lowest level of the Tomb of Nine Gods. This is the impetus for the Tomb of Annihilation adventure. Basically, everyone across the world who has ever been resurrected or revivified is slowly dying as their souls are being siphoned away.
Whoa, yeah. That's cool. Okay, yeah. So like your guy that you went and like got a diamond for is like just getting sucked out of his body.
Exactly. And then everyone who also has died before and isn't claimed by some other plane is also getting sucked and siphoned away too.
Oh man, that's wild. So this dude is making like systems. He's constantly like involved in like systems that do crazy stuff.
He's a mad scientist, like inventor kind of guy.
Okay, yeah, got it. It's all coming together.
Yeah. So when it comes to allies, Acerak has very few for obvious reasons. Outside of his cultists, whom he uses but cares little for.
He kills them at the end almost every time.
He does. He also managed to enslave his father, the Balor Tarnim, along with all the minions within Tarnim's domain.
Oh, bummer.
This is the demonic army he uses to caretake the Tomb of Horrors.
Okay.
Another notable servant of his is the Archwraith Mogadam, who Acerak employs to assist in architectural designs of his various tombs and dungeons. Lastly, Acerak has somewhere between 14 to 30 liches who answer directly to him. Whoa. And in return, he protects and secures each of their phylacteries.
Oh, wow, okay.
Which is also a power move, because if he has their phylacteries, he has powers over them.
But right.
I think the idea here is, for the most part, these guys willingly gave the phylacteries, because they're like, yo, if anyone can permanently protect my shit, it's this dude who's been doing it forever.
Exactly, yeah. I was thinking, like, that might not be the worst move, and then how often are you being called upon, and you're probably doing some dope lich shit when you are called upon.
Exactly.
So it's probably all in line.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing I couldn't find any information on is the current relationship between Acerak and his former master, Vecna. I think at first glance, the obvious answer is that they probably would see each other as too much of a threat to be anything other than enemies.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe that is true.
Rivals or something like that.
And maybe that's true. But for all of their similarities, I do find that they're actually quite different people with different goals.
Right.
While Vecna seems to be driven by the grand ambition of mastering and hoarding all magic and knowledge and becoming the sole deity, or at very least the most powerful of all deities to do so, Acerak is more of a mad scientist conducting evil reality-altering experiments for the sake of seeing what happens. For the most part, their goals don't really have much crossover, which is probably part of their lack of their collaboration and their lack of enmity. Still, I can't help but think about each of them hearing about each other's malevolent bullshit and thinking to themselves, like, nice, in a grudgingly impressed manner, like, that's my Acerak, man. He's doing big stuff.
See, I was speculating this narrative where they're hanging out, like just trying to figure out what they're gonna get up to next.
Yeah, sure.
And like they're still homies or whatever. And then like Vecna's like, hey, do you want to go to like this secret underground library and find secrets? And then Acerak's like, no, I want to make a fucking magic pipeline that siphons the fucking leaves off all the trees or whatever. And Acerak's like, ah, man, that does sound cool, but like, shit, that's just not my jam, dude.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Why don't you just go do that? And like, I'm going to go to this library. Yeah. And if I see you, I see you. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
all right, catch you later, dog.
I can also see them like also like meeting up and trying to always one up each other's stories.
Oh,
yeah, but like I did this, yeah. Because Vecna has some crazy shit he's done.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got about Acerak.
He shows up one day, he's like, what the fuck happened to your eye? It's a secret, dog. It's shut a secret up. Dog. Don't tell anybody.
That's hilarious. That's all I got on Acerak. I don't know if you got any other questions or if you want to jump into this immense stat block.
What's he doing now? Like when Tomb
of Annihilation was the last thing you wrote. The whole Aetherball thing that I just said.
Oh, okay, so yeah. that's the last main deal. Yeah, that's probably where you're jumping in if you're in the main timeline, I guess.
Yeah, if you're.
A lot of these guys seem like they're like, you know, there's ancient sorcerers that they're long gone and their remnants are left over for you to explore. But like, this is a guy that you can happen upon.
Yeah, he's still at it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's wild. Yeah. So yeah, let's get into this stat block.
It's a big one. So
Aserak or Aserak. We don't really know. Yeah. So armor class is 21 natural armor. Hit points are 285. And he's got 30 feet of movement speed. Nothing special there. So.
Now, I think in this stat block specifically, he is a lich.
Okay, yeah. I'm medium undead, neutral evil. So, yeah, that screams lich to me.
Yeah.
So, saving throws, con plus 12, intelligence plus 13, and wisdom plus 12. Very nice. I'm sure. Yeah, legendary actions on here. So, you got to get through those and then this. Skills, plus 22, arcana. Plus 22 history, very smart. Plus 12 insight, plus 12 perception, plus 15 religion. Okay. Damage resistance, cold and lightning. Damage immunities are necrotic, poison, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical. Pretty standard stuff.
Yeah.
Conditions, condition immunities are cannot be blinded, charmed, deafened, exhaustion or exhausted, frightened, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, or stunned.
So none of them.
Yeah, no, you can't do any of that stuff.
Charm? Was he immune to charm?
He's immune to charm. Oh, okay. Senses, true sight, 120 feet. Very potent, powerful ability.
Mm-hmm.
Passive perception is 22. So you're not sneaking up on this guy, it doesn't seem like.
No, definitely not.
Languages are abyssal, common, draconic, dwarvish, elvish, giant, infernal, primordial, and undercommon. I wonder why he needs to know specifically undercommon here. What was undercommon? Is that like
undercommon?
Subcommon? Like bad common, or is that like the underdark common?
It's the underdark common. Okay. Like, oh, that's bad common. He's speaking bad common.
Well, in Dark Tower, they have high speech and low speech.
That's common in a lot of different fantasy.
Right. Things.
You have like high chant and low chant and all that stuff.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So but no, I was like, oh no.
No, undercommon is just
underdark speak.
Yeah, it's underdark speak.
Okay. Is it supposed to sound kind of like common?
I don't know. I just, since they are designated as different languages, like, just because you can speak one does not mean you can understand the other.
Exactly. Otherwise, you wouldn't differentiate them with a title. All right. So, special equipment. Interesting. That's not on a lot of dudes. we haven't gotten to the stat block with that
special,
on it.
Yeah,
it's
special, bro.
Yeah. Apparently, it says it right there. Aserak. I keep wanting to say Aserak.
I know.
Aserak carries the staff of the Forgotten One.
Oh, that is
Appendix
important.
He wears a talisman of the sphere and has a sphere of annihilation under his control.
Those are all very powerful magic items. I should have printed those out too, but sorry, I didn't. I forgot to.
Do you want to like look it up while I read?
I'll pull up some tabs.
So legendary resistance is 3 a day. So if Aserak fails a saving throw, he can choose to succeed it instead. Rejuvenation. Aserak's body turns to dust. Lich dust. It's back. it turns to dust when he drops to 0 HP and his equipment is left behind. Aserak gains a new body after 1d10 days, regaining all his HP and becoming active again. The new body appears within 5 feet of Aserak's phylactery, the location of which is hidden. So only the DM knows. Spellcasting. Aserak is 20th level spellcaster. His spellcasting ability is intelligence. The spell save DC is 23. He's got a plus 15 to hit with spell attacks. Aserak has the following wizard spells prepared. So cantrips are Mage Hand, Ray of Frost, and Shocking Grasp. I love Shocking Grasp. First level, Ray of Sickness and Shield. Shield's super, very palatable spell.
Yeah.
Second level, Arcane Lock and Knock. So if he shields, his AC is actually 26, which is beef. Arcane Lock and Knock, those are great. Third level, Animate Dead, Counterspell. Fourth level, Blight, Ice Storm, Phantasmal Killer. Fifth level, Cloud Kill, Hold Monster, Wall of Force. Sixth level, Chain Lightning, Circle of Death, Disintegrate.
Oof.
Seventh level, Finger of Death. Gross. Is that like Naruto? Like the 10,000 years of pain?
Yeah.
Plane Shift, Teleport. Eighth level, Maze or Mind Blank. Or Maze and Mind Blank. Ninth level.
I think Mind Blank's that brutal one.
I can't. I don't. We haven't like got. I've never played a spellcaster that casts at the high levels, nor have I run Acerak. So I really don't know what some of these do. Everybody knows what Power Word Kill is, right?
Yeah.
So, and then Time Stop, which I think is apparent by the name.
He's extremely powerful.
Yeah. Teleport, we've kind of talked about a little bit. Honestly, we could do an entire podcast on just magic, like what magic spells do and how they work. And we can like learn them and stuff for realsies. Yeah. I didn't really go over how many slots, but he's got fourth, fifth, and sixth level. He's got and seventh. He's got three slots each of those. And then he's got two eighth level slots, two ninth level slots. And the third and below are just at will. He doesn't have slots for third.
God
he just
damn.
Does a bunch of third. And third level spells are pretty good. Like counter spell.
At will?
He just at will's reaction counter spell to you.
Yeah, that's nuts.
So if he wants to counter spell higher stuff, he can use the slot.
Yeah.
But he can just do it.
Yeah.
Like, don't bother trying to cast.
Yeah, nothing below level three or whatever it is.
Right. So he has turn resistance, which he has advantage on saving throws against any effect that turns undead.
That makes sense.
So your cleric,
he's unturnable.
You know, yeah. Well, not unturnable, just difficult.
Right.
Paralyzing touch is an action. Melee spell attack, plus eight to hit. Reach of 5 feet for one creature. He's going to hit 10 or 3d6 cold damage, and the target must succeed on a DC 20 con save or be paralyzed for 1 minute. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on a success. He's got a staff, which is a plus +3 quarter staff. Nice. Mm-hmm. Melee weapon attack, plus +11 to hit. Reach 5 feet, one target. A hit does 7 or 1d6 plus +4 bludgeoning damage, plus +10 or 3d6 necrotic damage, or 8, 1d8 plus +4 bludgeoning damage, plus +10, 3d6 necrotic damage when he uses it with two hands. So, I mean, he's got to be pretty desperate to hit you with the quarterstaff.
Yeah, if you're at the quarterstaff, you probably already won that
he's
fight.
He's like, fuck.
He's got, still, gonna, man, he's got quite the arsenal. So
I'm going to whack one of these guys.
I pulled up the Staff of the Forgotten One.
Okay.
This crooked staff is carved from bone and topped with the skull of a forgotten archmage who Acerak destroyed long ago. Etched into the skull's forehead is Acerak's rune, which is known on many worlds as a sign of death.
Okay.
Beneficial properties. While the staff is on your person, or in this case his person, you gain the following benefits. Your proficiency bonus to intelligence, arcana, and history checks is doubled. You can't be blinded, charmed, deaf, and frightened, petrified, or stunned, which he can't be.
Yeah.
Undead with a challenge rating of 2 or lower will neither threaten nor attack you unless you harm them.
Okay.
You can wield the staff as a plus +3 quarter staff that deals an extra 3d6 necrotic damage on a hit. Furthermore, you can invoke Curse. The Staff of the Forgotten One has 7 charges and regains 1d4 plus +3 expended charges daily at dawn. While holding the staff, you can use an action to expend 1 charge and target one creature you see within 60 feet of you. The target must succeed a constitution saving throw or be cursed. While cursed in this way, the target can't regain hit points and has vulnerability to necrotic damage. A greater restoration, remove curse, or similar spell ends the curse of the target.
Okay, yeah, and I was going to say great timing because invoke curse was the next action I was going to read. And I think,
oh, so
I think
it's that was built in. Everything the staff did was built into the block then.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, okay. It was good to read, though, because there was a little bit of lore there. That ancient name sorcerer.
That's true.
All that stuff.
That guy no one remembers.
That guy nobody remembers because he blew that fool up so hard so long ago. He beat him so hard, he didn't just kill the guy, he killed his name.
Yeah.
So legendary actions. Acerak can take 3 legendary actions, choosing from the options below. Those get used one at a time and only at the end of another creature's turn. So when you end your turn, like if you attack this guy, he can do these legendary actions immediately after. So at will spell, watch out, Will.
Stupid.
Acerak. Cast one of his at will spells. Uh-huh. At will. Make a saving throw, dog. melee attack. Acerak uses paralyzing touch or makes one melee attack with his staff. Okay.
I mean, legendary actions. The point is, he does stuff again.
Yeah.
Every turn, he's doing something, basically.
Right. Frightening gaze costs 2 actions. Acerak fixes his gaze on one creature he can see within 10 feet of him. The target must succeed on a DC 20 wisdom saving throw against this magic or become frightened for 1 minute. The frightened target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on a success. If a target saving throw is successful or the effect ends for it, the target is immune to Acerak's gaze for the next 24 hours.
Gotcha. Right,
cool. Talisman of the Sphere, which costs 2 actions. Acerak uses his Talisman of the Sphere to move the Sphere of Annihilation under his control up to 90 feet. Disrupt life costs 3 actions. Each creature within 20 feet of Acerak must make a DC 20 constitution saving throw against this magic, taking 42 or 12d6 necrotic damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a successful one.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty huge.
Yeah. Now, I think this adventure is actually designed for up to level 10. So I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to actually fight him. But if you do, you die. And this is how.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But just, I don't know because I've never ran that adventure. So
he just like repeatedly blows you up with huge magic and this disrupt life thing.
Real quick, I'm going to look up the D&D, the 5e stats for the Sphere of Annihilation.
Okay.
Because I don't believe that was stated in there. Just that he controls one.
I would love to see a fight go down between a party and Acerak that is like, he trolls you the whole time and just hits you with the quarterstaff.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like that, because it's baked into the legendary action as well. So he's going to be doing a lot of staff swinging at some point.
It's Man, true.
This so, guy's, oh yeah, go for it.
Oh, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say this guy has, I feel like these are like when Wizards of the Coast or whoever builds these guys, like maybe Gary, is like, I don't know, like, I'm bored of my, like, regular level 20 sorcerer. Let me see, like, what's possible with, like, everything
at my disposal. It's like a mega lich.
Yeah.
It's a mega lich.
Yeah.
So, Sphere of Annihilation, this 2-foot diameter black sphere is a hole in the multiverse, hovering in a space and stabilized by a magical field surrounding it. The sphere obliterates all matter it passes through and all matter that passes through it. Artifacts are the exception. Unless an artifact is susceptible to damage from the Sphere of Annihilation, it passes through the sphere unscathed. Anything else that touches the sphere but isn't wholly engulfed and obliterated by it takes 4d10 force damage.
Wow.
The sphere is stationary until someone who controls it can move it 60 feet. You can use an action to make a DC 25 intelligence check to take control of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you can actually try and fight Acerak's control over that sphere mentally.
Nice, okay.
You'll probably lose.
That's cool, though, that you can try.
Yeah, it's basically an intelligence contest.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
And if you start to lose the fight, the sphere will start to move towards you. To obliterate you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get spaghettified, because this is like a mini black hole, like wandering around the battlefield.
If the sphere comes in contact with a planar portal, such as that created by the gate spell, or an extra-dimensional space, such as a portable hole, the DM determines randomly what happens using the following table. 1 to 50, the sphere is destroyed. 51 to 85, the sphere moves through the portal or into the extra-dimensional space. 86 to 100, a spatial rift sends each creature and object within 180 feet of the sphere, including the sphere, into a random plane of existence.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
So, a lot of fuckery going on.
It's a black hole.
Yeah,
it's a black hole.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's just floating around this dude.
But he just has one.
The cool thing is that if you kill this guy, the cool thing is that you killed him. An uncool thing happens, which in 1d10 days, he will show up again somewhere.
Yeah, the cool thing is you killed him. The bad thing is you're fucked because he's coming for you, and he has an eternity to do so.
Right, because the other cool thing, which is also a bad thing, is you probably took all his cool shit that he leaves behind
when
he dies.
He definitely wants that back.
So he's going to go find you to go get it. Yeah. And you're going to either have to keep killing him, or go find his phylactery, which just sounds like basically fucking impossible.
Yeah.
But I think if you find his phylactery, there's a good chance you're going to find a ton of lich phylacteries on your way.
That's true.
You're going to be breaking phylacteries, and they're going to be fakes. There's like you break a phylactery, you think you did it. He shows up in your fucking house at night and kills you. What a fun campaign idea, though. Your dads are the one, and moms and dads are the ones that have been fighting Acerak over and over again and killing him. Now they're training you, the next generation.
Oh my God,
to keep killing Acerak.
It's like Belmont and Dracula.
Yeah. So, sorry, I keep saying Acerak.
It's Acerak. I know. I used to call him Acerak too until I researched this episode. Anyways, any questions about Acerak before we get ready for a long rest?
No. I feel thoroughly educated right now.
I'm glad. I worked hard on that. All right, guys. It's long rest time.
It's time for a long rest. No one dead here in my room.
Oh, no.
Except for, I think maybe these slippers can qualify as my phylactery when I decide to become a lich.
For sure. I think that's a good choice.
Yeah, that would be fun. Mm-hmm. Does it have to be a jar? Do you have to be able to seal it?
Yeah, that's true. You do have to be able to seal it. So, no, I'm sorry. Your slippies cannot be, for they are always open for your feet.
They're always open for my feet. Yeah. But when I do decide to become a lich, I will use the flesh golem one and like stitch it up.
Okay, that works.
Yeah, we'll be good there. Mm-hmm. So happy Halloween again.
Indeed.
I hope you're having a wonderful spooky time with us, but it's over now.
Well, it's not over.
It's not over and over. We're still running our Halloween contest, it's which true. Is that revamp Strahd.
Uh-huh.
Get on the
Curse of Strahd revamped.
Get on the gram, get on the Twitter and do the thing.
Yeah.
Fucking do it.
Yeah, share an episode of any of our shows with hashtag DungeonCast on Twitter. You'll be entered in the contest.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say the Instagram rules.
Tag people on the gram. One comment equals one entry as long as you tag a friend. Don't tag Nike. No one's actually tagged Nike yet.
Why should they?
They shouldn't because okay. It won't work.
Okay.
It won't count.
Okay.
I'll find you.
Okay.
There's an Instagram post. It's a few posts back now, but like go for it. It'll be fun. Let's see. We got anything else? Super Quest Saga is almost back.
It's almost back. It's going to be back November 3rd. Next week.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. PSA, please go vote.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My
Do
goodness.
That. I voted already.
Yeah, I'm about to. I got my mail-in ballot right here, yeah. so I trust it. Go vote. Just go vote, please. Please. It's very important. I know everybody's like fucking up your grill about it.
Yeah.
But, now we are too. So
I guess so.
It's not for no reason. So, yeah. Get in there, do the thing. It's not too late. And when you're done voting, go watch the premiere of Super Quest Saga as a reward, because it'll probably air after you're done doing that. And if you're not done doing that, it'll be on YouTube for you to watch after you're done doing that.
Indeed.
So, yeah. Congratulations for voting, and congratulations for having a wonderful Halloween. And keep chugging on, guys. We're going to break to the other side eventually. Of this shitty 2020 stuff. So stay strong.
All right. I think we can call a game.
All right.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.